Like you really hot. Understand, can you really not? Hype is all you really got. Blow your spot. We pack it in like a circus. Basically, send this shit. Stop the way we work this. Spit that official rap. From the what? Rap contest. Knock it off with the nonsense. The hot. That's been at you. Now they're bound to hit you. To have the members in your crew. Here we out to get you. John Mills, stay up in my senses. All the time. I stay finesse. That's the case. I gotta teach a lesson. No question. Competition mean not a. You make it hot for me and mine. Can we make it hotter? Yeah. Hey, yo. Wait, this way I be at.
Everyone, welcome to the September 19th edition of the In the Now Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with Sidekick.
VR.
And join us again for the third time.
Great.
Great dramatic pause there.
Gray area in the easy. All right, well, we have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. And here we go. All right, well, this is kind of an interesting article about a piece of software that allows you to run software built for other PC or processor types on any other processor type. A Silicon Valley startup claims to have cracked one of the most elusive goals of the software industry, a near-universal emulator that allows software development or developed for one platform to run on any other with almost no performance hit.
Wow.
Trentative Corp of Los Gatos or Gatos... California claims its quick transit software allows applications to run transparently on multiple hardware platforms, including Macs, PCs, and numerous servers and mainframes. This opens up a whole new world of things you can do because previously software was tied to a particular processor. It gives you the access to a much greater diversity of software. The company claimed quick transit eliminates the need to port software from one platform to another. Software applications written for one platform will run on almost any other without any modifications to the underlying program. For example, Quick Transit will allow the next generation Xbox, which will have a Mac-like power PC chip, to run first generation Xbox software, which was written for an Intel chip. In demonstrations to press and analysts, the company has shown a graphical demanding game, a Linux version of Quake 3 running on an Apple PowerBook.
Wow.
One of the key breakthroughs is performance. You can't tell the difference between a translate application, and a native application. Transit have launched the software on Monday, which is back in early September, with versions for Itanium, Opteron, x86, and PowerPC chips. And let's see, there's one other thing I know I circled. Now, you know, I took a look at their website, and I couldn't find like any demo software or anything like that to download. I don't know. Hopefully it's not, a bunch of wishwash. You know, because you could run, I think, the Linux version of Quake 3 on an Apple PowerBook because it runs, well, Unix. And you can install Linux libraries right on top of it, and I don't know. But hey, if it really works and it's really out there, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
Just breaking the digital divide. That's what it's all about. So... things that used to play in your Commodore, you can play it on your toaster.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing compatibility.
So, oh, dude, you know what my dad was telling me? He goes, have you seen these new refrigerators? And I said, no. He says, well, I was at this person's house, and they had this new refrigerator, and it had a flat screen on it.
Oh, yeah.
It was a sick.
It plays freaking DVDs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want one.
Who wants to... Are you serious, Grayer? Who wants to stare at their...
Yeah, I've seen the commercials for it.
I would love to have one.
It's bloody amazing. Like,
I understand your like point about how ridiculous it is, but that's why I would want one.
No, I mean, like, even the whole, ridiculous bling-bling factor, but, I mean, the idea is, do you really want to sit at your kitchen table and watch your refrigerator?
I want to be able to go up to my refrigerator and touch the screen and I want to order milk and have it delivered to my house from my refrigerator.
Right on. See, I'm so down with that there, Gray.
Why can't you just do it on your laptop?
But, you know, when I'm watching, like...
Because it's the point that I have the option to.
See, there's some movies that are just so darn good that... When I need a ramen break, I don't want to take a break from the movie.
Well, yeah, but I don't think it transfers like you're 30 minutes in the movie and all of a sudden, boop, it's like continuing on over there at the fridge.
Well, I'm sure that it's more than likely cable compatible.
See, but
if you can play a DVD, it's you can run cable.
Oh, you're saying if you're watching it like via TV television thing? I don't know, man. Like, why don't people just line their houses with speakers in every room, like Prince does? And he's recording equipment, so he can actually record in every room of the house if he wants to. But why don't they just put LCDs all over the damn house? You know what I mean?
Well, see, the whole thing is that I wouldn't be using it like a TV. You know what I mean? I'd be using it for like a more practical use. I would have like
Would you sell advertisements on it like those urinals do?
On it, like fucking. You'll
see that could make make the refrigerator just free.
Going on in the background.
Wait, say that one more time, Gray. Are we like stamped all over you?
No, I was saying I wouldn't have it like playing TV on my fridge. I would have it like playing like peaceful shit, like forest stuff.
Well, yeah,
the leaves in the background, bullshit.
Or for people that have a food addiction, you can be playing really obnoxious, hardcore, like disgusting things. So when they don't want to go in the kitchen.
Actually, Gray, when I was over at your place, you could actually see the TV from the living room or the refrigerator from the living room.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some kind of benefit.
Set it up to be an asterisk box.
Yeah, set up an asterisk box refrigerator.
I'm calling up my fridge.
You're poning off your fridge.
Well, see, I've always dreamt of the day where, like, you know, there'd be some kind of, like, LCD paint that you could, like, paint your house in or the inside, and everything would be like a TV screen. That would be cool.
It's kind of like that one building down there in Times Square, New York. I don't know, man. I don't know. I would rather do other things than do it at my refrigerator. But you could sell those. You know, they have those urinals that have the advertisements above your head. You can invite your friends over and then have a big old party and then rent out your refrigerator space for advertisements.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I wouldn't do that, man.
Neither would I.
I would.
All right. Well,
I wouldn't want to be like Tron riding around in the car with painting all over it that the company's paying to advertise Safeway.
Tron works at Safeway?
No, I guess you can. There's companies that will pay you money to drive around with your car.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
All these decals and logos of like stuff.
Yeah, I looked into that, and there's so many restrictions on it. It's amazing.
Like what?
Like. They usually only pay you so much, and so you still usually have, some car payment, and because it's now a commercial vehicle, you really technically have to have commercial vehicle insurance, which is usually much higher, and then they have GPS tracking on it, so they can monitor if you're living up to, you know, the high-profile parking that you need to have. The amount of miles that you're putting on it and keeping it clean. And, you know, I don't think they pay for damage. That if you damage their decals, then you either have to pay for it or, you know, you have to work some deal with them.
No, it's ridiculous. There's so many, like, types of advertising out there, and I think people invent new things, like new magazines and stuff like that. Like Maxim. The only reason the Maxim was invented was for the advertising. I mean, most newspapers... they're dirt cheap. Some of them are even free because all the advertising that's put into it, and to me, actually, I'm leaning to another subject that I wanted to bring it up. Two subjects now. One is most of the newspapers, I think, you can't really trust them because I think for the most part they're just there to sell advertisements. And then the second thing is there's so much advertising out there, you don't really know if it's effective or not. They're like, you're going to have your advertisement on this car and it's going to be driven around and so many people are going to see this every day. But, like, I don't know. Advertising typically doesn't work on me. I don't know if there seems to be another brand of sucker out there that really enjoys, like, watching commercials or advertisements. Like, the other day I was watching a movie, and right at the end of the movie, you know, it's an off-cable movie, like a, you know, basic cable movie. And once it was done, boom, it goes straight into an advertisement for something. And I was thinking, just now, because I've been dealing with a little bit more advertising in the business world, I was thinking, right after the movie, what do? You walk away. So why would you want to have that spot that's right after the credits of a movie? You know what I mean? And there's just so much ineffective advertising that's out there.
Well, you don't want the second commercial right after the movie. You want to, you know, because you don't instantly, like, oh, there's a commercial. I'm jumping up and I'm running out of the room.
I don't know. As soon as I see those credits gone, I just flick the channel because I know that they're gonna kill it and go straight to some gay commercial right away. I don't know.
I really like that one gum commercial with the pinata for the strappleberry gum, the from the makers of Juicy Fruit.
I saw that.
Spits it out and then it attacks all the kids to try to get it back.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. The one also for that they have the office people that are disguised as, you know, like one's a filing cabinet and the other's like.
Yeah.
He's got decals on him that makes him look like the view out of the window. I thought that was awesome.
The guy jumps out.
It's like Office Commando, you know, Juicy Fruit acquisitions. It's beautiful.
All right. Chipping back on here. Internet news groups have circulated news of discovery for the past week in a typical news group style. Users have pillared Sony for deploying a high-tech copy protection that can be defeated by paying a visit to a stationary store, which means getting a marker. I wonder what type of copy protection will come next. One posting on Alt Music Prince read, maybe they'll ban markers. Basically, the internet postings claim that tape or even a sticky note can be used to cover the security track, typically located on the outer rim of the disk. And there are suggestions that copy protection schemes used by other major labels can also be circumvented in a similar way. I've read about this before. This has been used before. You know, another thing is, you know what's so stupid is that the audio plays, right? Play it in a CD player, play it in whatever. And all you got to do is pipe that audio, you know, back into your PC, you know, through another recording device. And it's going to work. You're going to be able to record it just fine. I mean, if you can hear it and recite the words with your own mouth, then you can pipe that into some other place and record it, you know?
I remember when I found out that you could just take a marker and, you know, draw around it.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. But it's always been like that. Like, even with cassette tapes, what did you do? You would just take a piece of toilet paper and put it in a little hole at the end and you could record over it and shit, you know?
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's just trying to make things more crap for the consumers. I see that they're trying to, you know, limit how this wide-open strategy works, but really it's just, in the end, it's just going to be a lot of control or, I don't know, I think it's going to be much the way it is now. Something's going to come out, it's going to be defeated some other way. We're going to transition from one trend to another. They can never really stop this stuff. It's just spending more money and, you know, it's good for the economy because companies that try to invent this software or, you know, gives people jobs.
but it only does it for a select few. And that's the problem with...
It does what?
The companies which are creating, like, well, any kind of information. Like, well, those programmers that are doing, you know, copyright protection or whatnot, those are actually only a handful of people in all reality.
Yeah.
In this country, of the 370 million people there are, you know, not even 1%. It's like a hundredth of, actually more like a thousandth of a percent, are even programmers. And they get like a millionth of.
Are you talking about the corporation? You're talking about doing the people doing the copying? I'm kind of losing you.
No, what's good for the economy? So the people that are actually getting paid to do that, of coding. You know,
what I'm saying is in this new world of. you know, of all these uncertainties, like, and all these billions of options all the time that are being thrown out there, you know. I guess and one positive way to look at it is it's keeping everyone busy, you know. Are we worried about terrorism? Are we not worried about terrorism? You can get blown up tomorrow, you can't get, you know, there's all these uncertainties, you know what I mean? Well, you can have your music come out, but you might need some copyright protection scheme in there, you know. Or, you know, Microsoft's going to try to build it into their operating system, and it's a bunch of crap, and people keep circumventing it, and they keep coming out with it, and I'm saying in the end, gives people a few hobbies and gives other people a few jobs.
Yeah.
So, but it will suck.
Speaking of copyright, let's get something together where we can throw in $10 and get the DEF CON recordings.
Yeah.
Gee, $70 they want to charge for that? And the people that spoke don't even get the money? Come on now.
Actually, we have a copy of the CD here of all the DEF CON recordings.
A word.
Yeah, they're all...
I'm down to pay $10.
They're all the audio. It's not video. It's audio.
Yeah, because I wanted to put that on my PBX.
All right. And we got that without spending any money. So, I don't know.
That's piracy.
Yeah. We're hurting those speakers. Actually, those speakers don't even have any rights to that speech. Okay, well, you know, I read about this a few months ago, and now I'm reading about it again. Symantec to acquire At Stake. I thought Symantec bought At Stake a while ago. Maybe I'm wrong. Symantec Corp, the global leader in information security, I don't agree with that at all, announced that it has signed a definitive agreement. Okay, a definitive agreement to acquire At Stake. At Stake is basically a group of hackers. At Stake provides digital security consulting services and award-winning security auditing and analysis products to assess and manage risks in the technologies that are deployed in corporate environments. Well, maybe they can tell them how to build a better antivirus software, because there's a lot of stuff that Symantec antivirus does not pick up versus other competitors. Okay. Notice in the background, Gray Area won't be able to notice this, but I'll turn it up. This is the guitar version of Zelda. And actually, on the...
Is that the video of it?
No. No, I have the CD that has quite a few, like... Actually, they should use this on gamer radio. I've got some really awesome songs that are all, like, video game related. There's a techno version of... This is Contra. But, yeah, actually, when I do the...
You are such a geek, Slip.
Yeah. When I do the opening of the show and the ending, I'm gonna put some of this video game music in there. But, no, the songs are really good. And there's a heavy metal version of Metroid song. There's a techno version of Zelda's song. And it's pretty damn good music.
Yeah, but I like them the way they are, man.
The originals?
Yeah, man. Well, hey, Mike Tyson's Punch Out. I would just play it and let the whole. When he's running behind the fat guy, I would just let it play, man.
No, I mean, yeah, I'm totally down with, like, the originals, of course. This is just, you know, they've added some more to it, and it's really good.
They're new and improved.
Well, I don't want to say new and improved. Hey, what's that? I don't want to say new and improved, but, just good stuff. All right, well, talking more about Windows XP Service Pack 2 smack.
Smack.
It's a bunch of smack.
I still haven't grabbed that. I think I'm going to.
Wait, you did grab it, remember?
I thought I did, but I didn't know.
Oh, okay. All right, well, basically, under certain configurations, after you install Service Pack 2, your file and printer sharing data are still visible worldwide. Even if they have the firewall activated. There's certain configuration settings to where when you share files or folders, that the sharing is still out there on the internet for somebody to take a peek at. And obviously, you know, if you have a password on that user account, you're going to have to guess the, you know, the user account, stuff like that, for administrator or guest or whatever that is. But it's not like that's a tough thing for some of the passwords I've seen out there in this world. The way to fix this after you do the Service Pack 2 is basically choose Windows Firewall in the Windows Control Panel. And there's a tab called Exceptions. Select the File and Print Services and click on Edit. And you can see four ports which are used by, well, this one says four ports, depending on your machine. used by the file and print sharing service. Basically, it just says, like, what connection can be shared on. Can be shared on, like, you know, everything, the LAN. I don't have XP SurfSec 2 because I don't have XP to really tell you all the options. But you can select to just keep it open, the sharing for the internal LAN, if you even, you know, need sharing installed, which I don't see any reason why most sharing needs to be done unless you're on some sort of corporate thing, and the desktop shouldn't be sharing anything to begin with. I don't know, but that's how you fix it. And Service Pack 2, from what I'm reading here, is that if you had the firewall enabled on Service Pack 1, it just takes the same settings and moves it over to the same settings for Service Pack 2, for your firewall settings. And if they were crap before, then they're still crap now.
A really great service pack.
Yeah, so I don't know. Plus, you know, you gotta agree that it's, once Microsoft does something like this, it's obviously whoever's, like, the top security firm or wants to be, or whoever wants to make some noise, is going to go out there and try to find the best thing that they can to say that it sucks. Maybe it doesn't totally suck, but they're going to say, this thing sucks, and you see, blah, 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 Microsoft, da, 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 da. You know, everyone's got their own agenda out there. I don't want to be biased in saying that Service Pack 2 totally sucks ass. You know, I also want to say that it does suck, but, you know, there are some people out there that want to tell you that, see? Ha! You know, like...
Well, you know what? It sucks to fucking cut the grass. But, you know, you got to do it.
Yeah. So...
Unless you install rock.
Rock? What's rock?
You know, you don't have to cut the grass if you got gravel down.
Oh, put rock. Okay, I thought you meant like an operating system. Right, I was like,
you
what?
Can pave over it.
You like, am I out of the loop here?
Well, that's where Linux comes in.
Exactly. Definitely. Glad you could pick up on that.
Okay, well, this sounds pretty interesting, but there's a catch.
There's always a catch.
And the catch is the taxpayer's got to foot the bill. But here's what it is. What would it take to get someone to turn in one of those spammers who send millions of unwanted emails? At least $100,000, says the Federal Trade Commission. Six-figure incentives are the only way to persuade people to disclose the identities of coworkers, friends, and others they know are responsible for flooding online mailboxes with solicited pitches for prescription drugs, weight loss plans, and other products, according to an agency reported Thursday. Here's my idea. VR. Start spamming your buttocks off. I want to rat your ass like crazy. Rat on you. And then we're going to get, I don't know, $100,000 to $250,000.
Okay.
Taxpayer money.
Yeah.
And then you do the time, right? Uh-huh. and then I'll hold the money for you.
You'll hold on to it and invest it into producing your own capital. All right. Yeah, sounds like a great deal.
Yeah, I'll hold on to it. And then when you get out, I'll pay you back.
You know,
what is the penalty for fucking spamming?
I don't. Well, here I'm not sure. I really don't know. Let's see.
No, because otherwise I could actually start up my own spamming thing, turn myself in the next day after I do like two spams.
I don't know if that's worth like $1,000 or what. I don't know.
Well, no, they're saying, you know, six figures is the way to get people to turn them in. So I turn myself in for six figures. You know, and when they give me a slap on the wrist for, you know, doing two spams.
I'm sure they have limitations.
Oh, yeah, probably.
The FTC, in a report requested by Congress, did not take a position on whether such a system was a good idea. Here's one thing to kind of think about, though. So the payoff was between $100,000 to $250,000, higher than rewards in most high-profile criminal and terrorism cases.
Yeah, I know, that's pretty sick.
For example, the FBI pays $50,000 for tips leading to arrest of most of its top ten fugitives. So the funny thing is that Americans are really more concerned about getting rid of spam.
Yeah, so it's clogging my mailbox.
That's how Ryan Marlowe makes his money.
God.
So,
only he makes five figures.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Is it, even if the jail time was like, let's say, you know, less than like 4 years or less, that would be a good employment opportunity, because you take that.
I know, dude. They're making it a contest.
Oh yeah, like, you know, you can invest that money, go to jail for 4 years, come out, and be better off than if you busted your butt working a job for the last 4 years.
Well, here's the thing,
and it's all you know, tax free and whatnot.
You get to go to one of those federal pens, huh?
Yeah, Probably, and those are, you know, country clubs.
They give you laptops there you could spam off of.
Yeah. Then you could turn yourself back in.
And you're already there. You get direct deposit set up, and you're set. Now, this is what the smart thing is but that they should do, but it probably won't work out. Report said any reward should come from the tax... the report said any reward should come from the taxpayers' funds because the collection of civil penalties from the spammers will not be enough to finance the system. What I'm saying the smart thing would be is if they gave them enough civil penalties to the spammers,
yeah,
that would help finance the system. So, you know, but substantially fewer end up in assessments and payment of civil penalties for spammers. So.
Well, if the civil penalty was like only a penny per spam, that'd be more than enough.
Penny per spam?
Yeah.
A million pennies?
No, we're talking billions of pennies if they're, you know, at least somewhat active spammer.
Yeah, but you have to prove somewhat active. Somewhat active is a few thousand. But, you know, I don't know. Something to think about. Not sure really. Whether if that's the right
making?
Way to go. What did I make? What did I eat?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm eating chicken flavored rice right now.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get, you know, just a little. I had.
Oh, you're going to tell us what you ate?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what I ate.
Okay.
I went to one of my favorite restaurants of all time today.
Wendy's?
No.
Okay.
Called Chino Banditos.
What the hell is that?
Yeah.
They serve like fried rice with beans?
Well, actually, it is a hybrid of Mexican and Chinese food.
Fried rice with beans.
It is the bomb.
I mean vegetable fried rice with beans.
No, they've got like jerk fried rice, chicken fried rice, pork fried rice, black beans, refried beans, and... you know, one of my favorite things of their, like, entrees is the Diablo chicken. And it kind of looks like...
So are there, like, Asian waiters and Hispanics in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that was a bad joke, but... Wow.
But it's absolutely true. There's, like, one white guy.
Is he the manager?
No, he was the...
that's bad.
The menu ordering helper.
Oh, he was the greeter.
Well, what's funny is their system of ordering is great. Like, they actually have this whole little form that you fill out that it's all coding. That you're like, okay, I want a, you know, like a two entree meal with, you know, the number 5 and the number 13 with black beans or and
they have like burritos and enchiladas.
Yeah.
What? Where's this place at?
It's over on, what is that, 23rd Avenue and Greenway.
What the hell were you doing over there? Neither of us live anywhere near that.
Well, that's
I used to go to parties over there on 27th Avenue in Osborne.
Dude, the West Side is all about parties.
Yeah, I know. I know about that.
Well, they're opening another one up over in Chandler. Hmm. It'll be open in the next, like, 4 months or so. So I'm going to be really stoked.
Hmm. All right.
The Vortex. It's the name of it.
Oh, yeah, I remember the Vortex. Okay, well, basically, IBM had a booth at the Linux World Conference last month. And kind of a big old article talking about all the things going on in the Linux community and corporate support of people like IBM and Novell. And, yeah.
Right on.
IBM's doing its thing. And
well, they're just pissed off because Microsoft screwed them.
Yeah, they are. They're absolutely screwed off.
So that's why they're really supporting them.
That's absolutely the reason that they're upset. Okay. Well, this is. Hey, Greer, who was that guy? He used to do Hacker Radio. He hosted the website for Hacker Radio.
Hey, bro.
Who was it?
Which radio?
Hacker Radio.
Haxor?
Yeah, Haxor Radio. Who's the guy that hosted that website where they had their own shells and all that crap?
You talking about HBX?
Yeah, HBX.
Somebody out of St. Louis, I believe.
Yeah, he went up up the creek for identity theft and all that crap?
Oh, people left shit on people. Users were using his shit, and they had bad stuff on there. He got blamed for it.
Yeah.
That was a hairball.
This is kind of. I just brought that up. Well, you'll see maybe kind of what it has to do with this article. It's not the same guy. A computer technician who prosecutors say made possible the largest identity theft in U.S. history, surpassing $50 million, pleaded guilty Tuesday, back in a few days ago, to conspiracy in a scheme that poached personal information from tens of thousands of people. Philip A. Cummings, 35, said he did not realize that the accomplices would do so much damage with the information he sold. I didn't know the magnification, he told U.S. District Judge George B. Daniels, who set sentence for January 11th. However, he acknowledged that he knew his actions were wrong and illegal. Cummings worked from...
Yeah, but they were only slightly illegal.
Yeah. Cummings worked from mid-1999 through August 2000 as a computer help desk at Teledata Communications Incorporated, a Long Island computer software company that provides banks with computerized access to credit information databases. The government said Cummings agreed to sell an unidentified co-conspirator the passwords and codes for downloading consumer credit reports. Tens of thousands of credit reports were stolen, prosecutors said. Under plea agreement, Cummings may be sentenced to at least 14 years in prison for conspiracy, fraud and wire fraud. The deal allows him to ask for prison terms of less than 10 years based on health problems, including heart trouble, but the government can oppose any such request. As part of the plea deal, Cummings agreed to forfeit any property he obtained as a result of the crimes. According to the court documents, Cummings was paid roughly $30 for each stolen report. The information was passed on to at least 20 individuals, who then set out to make money from the information, feeding a network of criminals nationwide. The scheme involves tens of thousands of criminals and caused losses of between $50 million and $100 million, the government said.
Wow.
I just didn't know.
And for $30. That he could actually get essentially a death sentence because his heart will cut out on him after a couple of years.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that whole thing with Hairball, that's lame, man. Because he was, like, running shells and shit. And I guess one of the users on it was anonymous and, like, dumped a bunch of shit on there. And I guess it was discovered. And since he owns it, you know, they went after him.
Yeah, well, those...
There's some,
those shells...
Right up there somewhere.
Those shells, he kept it as, like, anonymous as possible. And then, like, but he also invited them to do whatever the hell they wanted to do. Like, he's like, you have the shell, you can do whatever you want to do. You know, it's like, we block certain things like, you know, stuff that would suck up bandwidth or, like, egg drops and crap like that. But, I don't know. I really don't have a take on the situation because I really haven't thought about it too much. It just sparked in my mind from...
But he's still enabling. That's the problem.
Well, you know, if you... Sometimes you can be enabling and you don't really know, you know. But from my reading of the site, it was a slight hint to saying that use my box for whatever you want, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
That would definitely, you know, get you in trouble. I would take the low profile approach of here's my shell server, enjoy it, have a good time.
Yeah.
You know.
No, don't do anything illegal.
Yeah. Learn something. Get used to learning. You know. Use this as a learning tool. You know, for learning Unix and stuff like that. You know. I definitely wouldn't say, you know, learn how to mess with other Unix boxes off my Unix shells. It's
like having a big neon sign. Hack here.
Yeah, you know, because anybody's going to log in and watch that crap. You know, anybody is going to see, you know, I don't know. Maybe they got some sort of crime that happened somewhere else and traced it back. But if they're just pointing to files that were on that machine, I don't know if the investigators that found that out were coming from the place that those files were stolen from, or they just logged on that box and started surfing the home directories, and I don't know, but definitely not the best idea to kind of put that kind of advertising out there, because yeah, you could definitely get set up the creek for something someone else is doing, you know, and that's not good. scientists and engineers are basically we're talking about the Genesis space capsule. Scientists and engineers are optimistic after having peeked inside the Genesis space capsule, which brought back bits of the sun but crashed into the Utah desert Wednesday. It's kind of funny. It didn't crash. It didn't, like, go really deep, you know, just a little bit. The craft was supposed to deploy a parachute and be retrieved in the air by a helicopter. Actually, they had a few helicopters. One of the helicopters was piloted by this stunt helicopter pilot that was in the, that did the movie Triple X.
Oh, right.
Instead, it broke apart on impact. Amazingly, scientists say much of the contents, microscopic particles that once rode the solar wind, are now embedded on shattered, collapsed collector plates and should be salvageable. In the teleconference with reporters today, mission officials said contamination is their greatest worry. Since desert dirt entered the capsule, they need to retrieve the sun's samples in pristine form. The goal is to learn more about the sun's composition and the history of the solar system and planet formation. The team might seek advice on handling the water-thin collector devices from the semiconductor industry, said Don Brunette, blah, blah, blah. We should be surprised if that we have anything. Genesis payload recovery leader. Oh, Don Sevilla. He's the Genesis payload recovery leader. Sevilla said experts are peeling back the layers of the onion. Basically, the article just goes on that they're trying to make sure that they can trying to do their best to recover any samples that are in there. Genesis launched in 2001. It carries a $264 million price tag. So that's a very vital piece of equipment on there, that parachute.
That failed.
Yeah, they're actually having a committee that they're putting together. They're saying it's a mission control thing, not a technical thing. I don't know if you could say what the hell it was off the bat without doing a real research.
A thorough investigation.
Yeah. Okay, well, I read about this, and actually read about this the other a long time ago. I read about it on CNN, and they post on Slashdot like 5 days later. It's kind of interesting, and I read about some other things. Get ready to the article, you know what I'm talking about. Government experts are investigating a claim that an unarmed nuclear bomb lost off the Georgia coast at the height of the Cold War might have been found. It's unarmed because it's got everything in it, but it doesn't have the plutonium trigger. The hydrogen bomb was lost in the Atlantic Ocean in 1958 following a collision of a B-47 bomber and an F-86 fighter. The group led by retired Air Force's Lieutenant Colonel Derek Duke of Statesboro, Georgia, said in July that it had found a large object underwater near Savannah that was emitting high levels of radioactivity, according to the Associated Press report. The group said it used radiation and metal detection equipment to search an area of the Wausau Sound off Tybee Island, where the bomb reportedly was dropped, the AP reported. An Air Force spokesman, Lieutenant Colonel Frank Smolinski, said Monday that it's only prudent to completely evaluate the evidence from the group's search. Basically, you know, there's a whole article, I read it before. It's there's this test that they were doing, and they actually had this B-47 up there with the bomb and everything, and it didn't have the plutonium trigger, but it was a real hydrogen bomb. And something had happened where they'd hit the other B-86 fighter. They attempted to land three times, couldn't land because they didn't want to land with the bomb, and something happened. So they got permission to throw it off the coast of Georgia, and then they actually went back and successfully landed. So the bomb's in the water. And, you know, I did some research. There's 50 nuclear bombs floating around this earth that were dropped or lost or something like that. A lot of them in the ocean. Most of them were from the Soviet Union during the Cold War, but they're there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're still there.
There's 50.
50.
And we are so concerned about our piddly airport security.
Yeah.
Where, you know, anybody with, you know, a Geiger counter and a metal detector and a boat and some scuba gear more than likely can get a hold of one of those things, refurbish it, because half of that stuff, yeah, highly technical, can be reasoned out to refurbish it.
You know, they talked about those.
Go to Africa, promise them some food, and you'll get a plutonium trigger.
Yeah. You know, that they talked about, well, that's in more reading in the articles, that they were thinking about not recovering it, because in recovering it, they might set it off.
Well, yeah. You get, you know, a good-sized boom, but not the devastating boom.
Yeah, so they're like, well, we'll probably leave it.
Oh, so there, you actually, heck, you don't even need a plutonium trigger because it's going to be a good-sized boom if it goes off.
Yeah, I just can't believe that stuff. And then they have, you know, those talk back not too long ago about those, you know, I don't know, Soviet or Russian suitcase nukes that they can't totally account for, you know.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
I don't, you know, it's just ridiculous. You know,
did you ever catch those guys that did that thing at that school?
What?
Remember all those guys got away? Those Chechen rebels?
How did they get away, man? They, like, came in and slaughtered everybody.
Yeah, but they, like, 9 or 13 of them got away.
Oh, well, there's a few. You know how they, some of the things they did there? They were on pressure plates, some of the Chechen soldiers, most of them. They stood on pressure plates around the school. So if any of the Russians came in and shot them,
they would
instantaneously blow up.
Oh, yeah.
There's some crazy stuff. You know, there's no health care with terrorism. There's no retirement plan. You know, you don't get a Mercedes-Benz. There's no hot chicks, you know.
Well, actually, you might meet some hot chicks.
Might meet some hot chicks?
You might meet.
At the bar with all your tats, and you're just like, I'm going to blow up the store. And they're like, you're so hot.
Uh-huh, pretty much.
Okay, well, fine. Maybe there's some hot chicks, but they don't. That's just a side effect of the job. They don't say, you know, they don't promise you that at the terrorist camp. They don't bring hot chicks down there for you.
Yeah, they might be a little toothless, but...
Toothless, yeah. You know, it's just ridiculous. I'm like, man, this is well planned out. Wouldn't these guys be like, I've got something better to do, you know?
Well, that's the thing, is that's why they're terrorists, because they are smart. They're more likely, at least relatively educated in the world scheme of things. And so, in their homeland, their opportunities is next to nil. So if you were highly educated, highly motivated, highly intelligent, and had nothing to do because of some perceived external force or power keeping you down, if you die, what really happens? Wow, you're released from this suffering and misery of boredom and, you know, misery.
Yeah, I don't know if, I really don't know much about the politics over there, but I don't know if, I don't know if Chechnya is, like, in dire straits like Afghanistan people.
Yeah, pretty close.
I don't know. I honestly do not know.
It's not as bad as Afghanistan, especially now, but a lot of the Eastern Bloc countries have been really bad for a long time. They have been, you know, like, perfectly imperialized by the Soviets, which is kind of interesting because they go and take over, impose their culture, their ways of doing things, their politics, and then suck them dry of their resources to keep them.
Yeah, I don't know why we went to Iraq, man.
Well, actually, yeah, the oil in it. Oh, he tried to kill my papa.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of other deeper reasons about the whole Iraq thing. That, you know, good and bad.
I was just joking around, like, I was just associating.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, right. From a historical standpoint, like, the only reason you go to war
is to acquire more resources.
Yes, period.
Yeah, that's
because
why I think...
Otherwise, you cannot fund the machine of war. Otherwise, it's this whole economic drain on your economy of, like... And that's what, you know, how the media plays off what we're doing in all these other countries is we're, you know, we're going in there, we rebuild them, and we give them back their country and all this. Well,
no, the media doesn't say that. No, the media totally supports the Democrats and
okay, well, whoever, it's throughout the media that this is what's happening. And that's the biggest bunch of crap. Because how else are we, you know, funding it all?
Okay, well, I don't want to get in this conversation because we've had plenty of times, but I don't know, man. I certainly wouldn't want Kude to still be able to drive down the street and take my daughter off and rape her whenever he felt like it.
Oh, yeah. It's not a good thing.
All right. Okay, moving right along. This is kind of an interesting note by Richard Stallman. How to fight software patents.
Ooh. Is this a how-to book?
No, not exactly. Just kind of has a small note here at the end. I mean, there's a bit of reading here, but I'm going to read the end here.
Okay.
Richard says, let every possible patent be granted, valid or invalid. Soon the world will reach a rigor mortis. Not a single line of code will be written. Everyone will own a patent. Everybody will have to share their patent with someone else. Everybody will sue everybody else anyways. Through the chaos principle, patents will simply wither and fall asunder.
Right on.
I
like him. He's a good systems thinker.
I encourage everyone to get as many millions of possible patents they can. Great way to go, Microsoft, for you have hammered the first nail in your own business model's coffin.
Yeah. I like him. Good job.
So, that's going to be great, you know.
Hey, you remember how last week I said that I lost all those numbers for those ANX that I found?
Yeah.
Well, I found them.
Where'd you find them?
I labeled them like I had some weird name. I ended up finding them when I was going through the
I wrote them on a notebook.
You're like, my favorite sex lines. And here's your numbers. All right. This is one campus here. Network Wi-Fi on the UTD campus is now an acceptable service covering almost the entire campus, even the newest buildings. With that acceptance has come new freedom to connect practically anywhere, anytime. UTD is also one of the first institutions to deploy wide-scale wireless for student residences, Waterview Apartments, what they're talking about, which is approximately 4,500 residents of Waterview Apartments have free wireless network access from their suites via Wi-Fi. Waterview is the largest apartment complex in Dallas and one of the largest student residence complexes in the nation to have exclusive wireless connectivity. I don't know if this is the school that I read about, but there's another school that was saying that there's a large problem with lots of students that live on campus to have wireless access points that are enabled. And some of them are enabled totally open, and they're hanging off the school's network. So what does that do? That allows, that's a security problem for the school's network. And they said that they were deploying Wi-Fi all over the school, so you would use their network. And they had a rule that if you were on their campus, you could not have a Wi-Fi network. You'd have to use theirs, because theirs they would be able to regulate
and
secure and stuff like that. So I don't know if it was a pay thing or anything like that. I don't think it was.
It was probably free if it was a campus.
Yeah, so I don't think that they're extorting them for money. I just think that, trying to...
Yeah, but that's the best way to do that, keep the whole infrastructure straight, safe.
Yeah, plus it's cheaper for students that haven't bought an access point. They can just jump right on.
That's right. That means more money for beer.
Yeah.
Iris, cough, cough.
Yeah. You know what? When I was, I was actually talking to my father, and he's down in Miami. He told me that some places sell beer for $10 a bottle. Bud Light, $8 a bottle. Corona's $10 a bottle.
Why?
Well,
it's because it's a high-class area.
Oh, okay. So we're not talking like at the local convenience store.
No. Yeah. No.
Oh, okay.
No. I was just talking to him saying, like, I can't believe that, some people can charge here in the States, like over here, like in Arizona. $4, for a bottle of beer.
Well, they're
over it.
Oh, wow. Well, he may just call back.
Yeah. Anyway, there is actually the most expensive bottle of beer ever is, I forget who makes it, but it's $200 a bottle. That's from the maker.
Okay.
It's $200 a bottle for a bottle of beer.
What's the benefit of that?
Well, there's only like 1,000 produced.
Yep. Here we go.
And it's, I think it's like...
You there?
I think it's like 40 proof.
What happened?
My cell phone dropped for whatever reason.
Oh, gosh.
VR kicked me out.
It's okay, VR's telling me that there's a $200 bottle of beer out there. It's 40 proof?
It's something like 40 proof. It's astronomical.
Is it aged for... 200 years? Or
no,
what? I mean,
it's there's only like 1,000 produced. Or it's like 1,000 or 100 produced. And they do it every year.
Be like, here, just give me a sip. I'll give you $10.
Yeah, pretty much.
Screw that. Okay. This is something that I'd rather have than a television on a refrigerator. Sony Corp has developed a computer chip that allows viewers to zoom in on any part of a TV image, such as a favorite soccer player or intruder on security camera footage, while keeping the image sharp. In the demonstration, an image of sprawling terrain remained sharp enough while zooming in to show that a tiny speck was actually a man walking, and a dark spot on the river was a hippopotamus. Sony said the digital reality chip doesn't zoom in the usual way by stretching horizontal and vertical scan lines, but instead delivers clear zoomed images by digitally enhancing the signal to communicate gloss, depth, and texture. A box attached with the feature may be sold separately, but the date and price are still undecided, said Sony.
Wow.
So whenever you're watching Girls Gone Wild...
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I was thinking.
You can just zoom right in. And, I don't know.
It's like a telephoto lens.
You know what's really funny is if they tracked what people are zooming in on, and then they start figuring out the best places to put advertisements. So when you're zooming in on it, all of a sudden, boop, like Pepsi comes up on your screen. You're like, whoa!
I was thinking about, like, nipple rings that actually have, like, a little Pepsi symbol hanging off
of it. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, quite a bit of stuff. Some of this stuff will just squeeze right past. TiVo is basically saying that if you're going to be recording things like pay-per-view type movies, there will be a limit to how many times you can re-watch the TiVo recording of that pay-per-view service.
And how are they going to know?
Well, because TiVo's got their own little operating system, and they know when you're doing things, and there's little broadcast flags that says, you know, this movie is this, and this movie is that, and
Well, yeah, for the average consumer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you can, you know, you could always use Freevo for Linux and skip that crap altogether. Yeah, so that's going to be appearing in 2005. Ever since TiVo came out, you know, everyone's really excited about it, and then start modifying it and getting a little bit more restrictive.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's been a new ring discovered around Saturn. Scientists using the Cassini probe have found a new ring and one, possibly two, new objects orbiting Saturn. Discoveries are in the planet's consorted F-ring region and look to be associated with Saturn's moon, Atlas. University of London scientists working on the four-year mission say that confirmation of another moon would raise Saturn's total tally to 34 satellites. The Cassini Huygens mission is a joint venture of the U.S., European, and Italian space agencies. And basically, just goes into more detail here, but they spotted something, and it might be another moon. That says that this object is 4 to 5 kilometers, which is about 2 to 3 miles.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's funny, that can be considered a moon.
Well, they called it a satellite.
Well, yeah, but this says here possibly two new objects. Okay, okay, so it'd be a satellite. All right.
Just orbiting Saturn?
Well, it says, if it's a moon, its diameter is estimated to be. So the article is saying that it could be a moon. I wonder what the minimum amount is to be a moon.
Well, I think that's the same as being, you know, like, how big does something have to be a planet? Because there's really no defining line on that, and that's why there's this big debate about Pluto, if it's really a planet or just an orbiting satellite, you know, another... You know, rock that orbits the sun.
Yeah. Oh, whatever it is, it's going to be an imaginary number because no one can come down and give us a definitive answer.
It's kind of like, what's the difference between a tree and a bush?
Nobody has the last name tree?
One's shaved.
Okay.
That was a really bad joke, but I enjoyed it.
Microsoft is doing something new here. If you go to their main Windows download page, basically it's going to give you a survey that you can choose to participate or not. It's going to ask you if your copy of the operating system you are using is licensed.
And then there's a little subprogram in there to instantly shut down.
Yeah. I don't really understand what they're trying to do with that. When you put on Service Pack 2, if it's not licensed, it really screws you over.
Well, I think what they're doing is then they can have some real statistics about how much of their product is being used out there that's not licensed. So then they can go and lobby, you know, like Congress to give them more power in order to, you know, come into our homes and and try to get their money from a service which really kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's their, you know, business model.
America Online said Thursday that it will not support, back in early September, a Microsoft-backing anti-spam technology called Sender ID. And we talked about this before as a new system that was being made by Microsoft, and they said jointly with Sendmail, to try to create a system to authenticate where users are coming from to help crack down on spam. The online giant cited lackluster industry support and compatible issues with the anti-spam technology SPF or sender policy framework that AOL supports. AOL moves comes from days after the Internet Engineering Task Force standards body voted down the Sender ID proposal. The IETFF said Microsoft's decision to keep the secret a patent proposal for technology was unacceptable. On open source, unacceptable open source groups also pulled their support for the Sender ID, claiming its license restrictions were too strict. AOL agreed with the IETF. Followed that its own reasoning. I don't know why you have to have any sort of strict licensing of this program. AOL has serious technical concerns about the Sender ID appears not to be fully backward compatible with the original SPF specification. A result of recent changes to the protocol and the wholesale change from what was first envisioned in the original Sender ID plan, an AOL spokesman said. And then also, just to add a little bit at the end here, though.
Well, see, that just sounds like a product of good corporate lack of focus and management, where they start doing this thing, and then they change it, and then they change it some more, and then they go, oh, man, we changed it. Let's try to fix it. And
well, at the end of the article,
it into something else.
At the end of the article, it says, despite public statements about cooperation, AOL, Microsoft, and Yahoo have made independent moves to turn their systems into standards. So AOL has its own standard. All three companies have submitted proposals to the IETF in the hope that their preferred technology will become the industry standard for anti-spam efforts.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I hate them all, dude.
So, I don't know.
With that new platform modulator thing that you should be able to do whatever and use them all.
Well, you can't. No, everyone's got to accept, one standard.
Yeah, I know.
Basically, and this is something for the Longhorn system that's going to be coming out here in 2006, I believe. Next generation of Windows basically will give companies an easier way to block the use of such devices as thumb drives and portable devices that you can plug onto your computer. Much has been made of security risks posed by portable storage devices known as USB keys or flash drives, music players like the iPod, and other small gadgets that can store vast amounts of data. Some fear that the tiny devices can be used to quickly copy sensitive data off business PCs' hard drives or to introduce malicious software into corporate networks. It's a real problem, and that's the feedback we've gotten from the IT folks. So basically, Longhorn's going to have a new system of enabling and disabling external storage devices or external devices, period.
Huh.
So I think it's a good thing. For the corporate environment to do that for security wise, and I'm just pushing through these last articles here, and then we have a rant from Gray Area that we're going to talk about. Or Gray Area is going to talk about. Grokolov Randall Davis, renowned professional of computer science at MIT, has, after an extensive search, found no evidence of SCO's claims that IBM has incorporated parts of the Unix 5 source code. Accordingly, the IBM code cannot be said, in my opinion, to be a modification or a derivative work based on the Unix System 5 code. So that whole lawsuit's getting very quiet now. It's because it really had no weight to hold. And hopefully nobody has to hear about it again, because it'll just end up going away. And for all you people that bought Linux licenses out there, suckers! Okay, and then, basically, teenager was charged with creating Sasser. We talked about this for him before, and I think we talked about it somebody else that was making modified versions of Sasser, or was it Netsky?
I think it was Sasser.
Prosecutors in Vernon, Germany, indicate an 18-year-old student this week who allegedly created the Sasser worm that crashed hundreds of thousands of computers worldwide after spreading at lightning speed over the Internet. In their 77-page indictments, prosecutors in the northern Germany town charged suspect Sven Joschen, I think that's Joschen, with computer sabotage, data manipulation, and disruption of public systems. Informants seeking a $250,000 reward from Microsoft tipped off the U.S. software giant to Joschen. His arrest was on May 7th after a confession to German crime officials that he told he wanted to create a virus, Netsky, to remove the other two viruses, MyDoom and Bagel, from infected computers. After developing several versions of Netsky, he created Sasser, according to the officials. The indictment papers listed 173 witnesses. So they split that $250,000 up between all those guys?
Wow.
That's a lot of witnesses. He must have been, you know, sitting in a huge room saying, "Hey, everyone, this is how you do it."
Yeah, that asshole, dude. He owned me. I don't know why they do that stuff, man. They need to cut it out.
He owned me.
Like happy viruses that pops up on everyone's screen like a smiley face that says you got owned or something.
You got owned.
Yeah. See, that would be a great thing. That would be cool.
You know.
Yeah.
It would become like a social disease.
Yeah, a lot of those people just do those things, I think, for just to see if they can really do it. But I don't know.
They just do it because they can.
Well, yeah, back in the early, 2000 years, 2000, 2001, a lot of it, I think, was a lot of Microsoft bashing, like, we hate your product, and they slam it, with the virus and show you how bad it is and all that stuff. Prosecutors say 143 victims had filed charges. 143 victims, but they're claiming the damages of only $158,000.
Wow.
Was that $1,000 a piece?
Yeah, that's probably to get their computers cleaned.
So.
And the time and the loss of productivity, blah, blah, blah.
All right, well, that's all I got.
So that's actually really, really good. Yeah, that's not like an American lawsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to rant about that because I'm going to own this kid. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, all right. Rant settled for a later time.
I know I said last weekend that, I grabbed all those ANACs. There is one ANAC I'm going to give out. That MCI gave me. It's area code 630-395-2641. Now this one you can pass anything to it. As an example, I'll call it right now to show you what I'm talking about. Okay, other line conference in. One moment.
Alright, I can't do it anymore.
Now, what is this ANI number thing? What is this?
ANAC.
It's reading the number that I'm calling from.
It's what?
Thank you for calling MCI's ANI verification system. Your ANI is...
4202 4 7.
Your ANI is
4202 4 7.
Your ANI.
Yeah, so I'm calling from a 6-digit number. 420-247.
Yeah, doesn't have any parameters as to what it accepts.
So you can pass anything to this an example of that.
So explain for the non-knowers of what an ANAC is.
Yeah, I have no idea here.
What's the automatic number announcement circuit? It just reads back your number. Like some read back the billing telephone number via VPN, like the real-time number that's being billed, and then some of them read back the CPN, like calling party number. That's like what the caller ID is that's being sent,
So what's the benefit of, why are the systems out there?
Well, because they have it out there just to test lines, just to make sure that the calls are being sent correctly. But, if you want to make sure that you're calling from a legit number, you can, call, a real-time billing telephone, number that tells you, the billing telephone number that you're calling from. And, you can't spoof to that. You can't pass, another number. It's going to tell you the number that's being billed for that call. So, there's a lot of ways to make your number someone else's billing telephone number. And actually, in the upcoming, magazine of, or issue of BenRev magazine, we did a pretty good article about it, about how to spoof VPN on there. So the next, didn't you have? I saw the article that you had in there, Flip, for the IP tables for the last issue that came out.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I think he's going to get that in store soon, but.
What was that, Greer?
I think he's going to. He's trying to get the BenRev magazine in stores now. Steak Dog, you know.
Uh huh. Oh yeah, yeah. I heard about that.
Now you got to get it at. You go to BenRev.com and you can order it there.
Okay. Yeah, great. Now, the ANAC number was a four-digit number, right? That we just heard, or was it five?
Six.
Oh, was
no, it was six.
Six.
Like, if I would have just called from my phone, it would have just told me my number, but I, transferred it out a certain way to where I'm passing 420, 24/7. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That was just an example that this one would read anything. Like, if I want to pass one, I'll call it and say, your ANI is one. You know what I mean? Like, it'll read anything, this particular number.
Okay, so it's not really telling you what your real number is. It's telling what you're sending out.
Yes. So if someone had caller ID, that's what they would see.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So you can tell if you're spoofing a number or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, We do have a few people that have moseyed on over the forums and said hello, but there isn't much traffic there to keep people interested. So more people need to mosey over there. Go to slipknot.org and hit on the forums there. And like I said in the last show, we put a lot of subjects up there that you can post about things that we talk about here in this show, things that we can read. Oh, you know what? You know, thinking about that, I remember somebody did post something for me to read on the show, and I'm going to pull that up right off the forums here. But yeah, you can go there, you can post topics for us to read off the show, and, you can post about things outside the show that we, you know, if you want to talk about those, and so on and so forth. Let's see, we did that one last time, and,
was that Thought Criminal last time?
Yeah, that was a different one. Yeah, I remember for sure we did have something here. Unless I'm really tired, I'm thinking about, of course, yeah, Freaknik is coming up. I think it's October 22nd through the 24th down in Texas.
What is Freaknik?
Are you going to that?
I don't think I'm going to be able to go to it. I'd like to go, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. Oh, yeah, here it is. Yeah, here we go. Let me open this up. This is by Mantis88. And pulling it up now. And Japan gadgets turn plants into speakers. The therapeutic power of power of flowers takes on a new meaning with Japanese gadgets that turns plants into audio speakers, making the petals of the leaves tremble with good vibrations. Called Kaon, which means flower sound in Japanese, the machine consists of a donut-shaped magnet and a coil at the base of a vase that hooks up to a CD player, stereo, or TV. Place the flowers in the vase, turn on the Kaon, and the magnet and coil relay the replay sounds, coil relay the sound vibrations up the stems through the plant's water tubes near the ear and hear the music emanate from the petals. Touch a leaf, it feels, and feel it shake as though it's a quiet dance. Wow. That's pretty interesting.
That's
it also helps
really
keep,
cool.
It also helps keep bugs off plants and helps cut flowers last longer. Okay.
Huh.
The plant is happy listening to music. And, wow, okay. It's about 3,000.
I don't see where, how far you can hear it away from.
I've got no clue. I was kind of curious about myself, how loud, what if you, how do you blow your pedals? what if you pump it up too high and blow your pedals?
Ooh, pedals are shooting off.
What if they had, competition gardens, you know what I mean? Like, come over here, my garden, pumps, dude.
So boom,
boom,
boom.
So that's a good way to
then
scare
you need
your
to actually
friends.
Have a sound arrangement of flowers where you have really small ones. You get the tweeters and then you get the mid ranges and they have the bass like sunflowers and you have full range of sound.
Yep.
That'd be pretty funny.
So yeah, as of June, the price of wind power dropped to 1 cent per kilowatt hour. Even without further expected improvements in turbine technology, the U.S. would need to use less than 3% of its farmland to get 95% of its electricity demand satisfied by wind power. Last year, the company I worked for landed a huge contract to supply rugged UPS system for GE's wind power division, which is growing rapidly into a multi-billion dollar business. That's from Mantis 88. So, see,
I've always wanted to get into wind power. Like, I've always just wanted a windmill in my backyard.
Well, if you stop flatulating all over my apartment, that might be the first way to move on to doing that in other arenas.
Well, I just need to, like, set up a windmill here.
Yeah.
Attach it to my belt. And
yeah. Generate your own power to power your cell phone.
That's right.
Okay, well,
I use it as a method of propulsion and power all at the same time.
Right. So, yeah, go to the forums.
VR, those, there's like the ANAC, there's like a lot of uses for them. I'm sorry.
Cool.
Like, if you're on a payphone, it doesn't have the number on it.
Yeah.
You can call, like, a toll-free ANAC, like, 800 all fours, and then it, like, reads back the number you're calling from. And if that, you know, receives incoming calls, then you can call that phone. You know,
so you can find numbers.
Know what the number is.
So you can dial like 1-800-444-4444.
Yeah, to find
MCI, it tells you like the number. Also, it also tells you the number that you're calling from.
Wow.
You know.
Cool.
So, oh yeah, I did modify my ham radio. I modified it once, and I found another way to modify it. I had to buy a low watt soldering iron. I modified it and got a lot more frequencies and. Found the traffic related frequencies for speeders and people on the road and everything kind of road related. So it's kind of fun listening to that stuff and figuring out the language that's given. And they also read out a lot of people's driver's license IDs and addresses too out over the air.
You should broadcast at a particular place.
Oh, you know, speaking of broadcasting, if you guys just chat amongst yourself, maybe I can get it to play.
Oh, that'd be really cool. Yeah. So is there any real other uses for the ANI thing?
Well, there's different, like, ones. Like, there's different types of systems. Like, say you own, like, a company and you have, like, multiple lines that are pointed towards your company.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know. There's, like, There's some that read back like the DINS. That's like what number it came in on.
I'm not picking it up. Not really.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get that in there.
Yeah. Try mine.
Let's see if they're still talking.
Okay.
Go ahead and keep talking, Brian, if you want.
Well, yeah, well, they're just like, you know, they tell you different information. Like, there was ones that told you class of service, like, if you're calling from a payphone or if you're calling from, like, a POTS line, being, like, plain old telephone service or, you know.
Okay.
Like, I got this one that does, like, a ringback, but, like, I can put it into different options. Like, to do, like, caller ID, call waiting, ringback. And then, like, if you call from a payphone and try to do that, then it disconnects the call. And there's current things that we're trying to work on. Certain code cards. There's just certain things you can do on certain code cards when you receive an incoming call.
So you could change, like, somebody's, you know, landline to be, like, a cell phone, pay phone, and they can't receive incoming calls?
For sure, we'll have them covered, yeah. 097-427.
Copy Arizona 1027
times 2. Go to the first.
Gomez, George, Ocean, Mary, Edward, Zuba. First name, Young, Victor, Edward, Tom, Edward, Little and Mary. COB 01-05-76 will be on Hispanic mail. Wait for the second.
Hey, I got that lady's number.
Gonzalez, Chris with a zebra on the end, Kirby Jr. First name, Noah, Edward, Sam, Tom, Ocean, Robert, middle of Mary, COB 05-27-79 on our Senate mail.
All right, I'll leave it at that. I don't want to broadcast anything else.
Yeah.
That might be personal out there.
Just name it birthday. That's not that bad.
Yeah, here. I'm going to put this back.
Yeah, that'd be kind of strange to have, like, you know, you just pick that up and have that broadcast over the internet all the time.
No, you should broadcast it on a bridge somewhere.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like a phone number, you call in and you can, like, listen to it on the phone.
Yeah, from what I know, it's not illegal to listen, but it's definitely illegal to transmit.
Yeah, hey, I'm in Phoenix, too. Hey, why don't you do that here?
Yeah, it's, well, the frequency is, crap, let me pull it up again. The, it's not illegal to listen, because it's just out there in the air, and anybody can pick it up. If it was encrypted in some sort of form, you know, and you decrypted it to listen to, I think there could be some problems with that. But I think the only thing that's really illegal is broadcasting, because you're affecting an emergency service. It's 319-750 is the frequency for the traffic. And I've heard traffic calls all the way up to, one's on 30th Street and University, one's on Frank Lloyd Wright. So this goes all over the place. That's one of their main ones. So, okay, well, that is, that's the show. Unless anybody else has anything else to bring up.
No.
All right. Well, I will be seeing everyone in 2 weeks. You know, go make sure to check out the forums, like I said before. And Gray Air's got a phone freaking area up there, so post some questions. Try not to be totally new about it. Go out there and do some reading before you ask any questions. There's plenty of articles that Gray Area and many other people have put up. Or, you know.
I'm working on a lot of shit right now.
Like, Gray, what's a nipple box?
A nipple box? Yeah. That's a female. Nipples in box. Okay, so, yeah, check out the forums. And this is Slip Mode heading on out.
This is VR saying we'll hit you next time in the same In the Now place, same In the Now channel.
All right. And, Gray Area?
Two in the pink, one in the stink.
Okay. It's Gray Area signing out. We'll see everyone in 2 weeks. See you then.